Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. If you'd like to sign up for our Daily Digest, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, everyone. I'm Shay from Planned Parenthood. Here are some fast facts about abortion. Abortion is really common. Chances are you know someone who's had an abortion. In the United States, about 1 in 4 women will have one by the age of 45. Abortion is extremely safe. Abortion is safer than getting your tonsils out or your wisdom teeth pulled. And abortion doesn't increase your risk of cancer, infertility, mental health issues, or any other health problems. The majority of people who get abortions are already parents. 59% of people who have had abortions have had at least one childbirth experience. Most people in the U.S. think abortion should be legal by a wide margin. 80% of Americans want abortion to remain legal, even in states where politicians pass laws against abortion. For more information, visit PlannedParenthood.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. Also heard on the web at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, hello.
It's been one of those days, hasn't it? It's been rather epic. We did some upgrades around here, around the studios. Did some electric upgrades. And when you do electrical upgrades, that means that everything is going to go haywire, and things are going to black out. And the upgrades mean actually. Things do worse. We're getting a fix. It's just, it's as we speak, weird things are happening.
Yeah, this one upgrade can lead to many upgrades if you're not careful.
It's just the story of my life is upgrading and regretting it. You know, every time I install new software or just upgrade hardware, it's like, well, why is it doing that? I don't want that. I want it the way it was. And it's just, oh boy. So we upgraded and living to regret it. No, actually, it's a good thing. It's a series of upgrades, but
forced sometimes, and bite off more than you bargained for.
And on top of that, there's a smoke thunderstorm we're getting tonight. What's happening right now? We got a warning of some sort.
Yeah, it's dry thunder.
Dry thunder.
Or something like that, yeah.
I mean, I've never heard of wet thunder either. I just always assumed thunder was part of a thunderstorm.
Me too. There's different variations on the norm of, I guess, what you expect for a storm, and this one is just imagine a thunderstorm, but a dry one, where there's a lot of thunder, and if you've not noticed, it's a bit hazy out.
Yeah, what's going on with that, Kyle?
Well, I'm sorry,
I don't mean to accuse you, but what's going on with all the...
I was amazed at just the copper color of sunlight and how midday it was still overcast, and the sun was just bright as ever, but going through all of this haze.
Really beautiful, you know?
And
you just want to go out there and put your fist in the air and take a good deep breath. And
no.
And apparently that's wrong.
It is a tough air quality day for some people out there.
And this is all Canada's fault?
It is. There's some smoke coming across the border.
Those bastards.
Uninvited. And it's a sure reminder that we're all connected. And smoke sees no borders, apparently.
Well, how kumbaya of you. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awfully good to be reminded of. So, so it's smoky outside, but it's not our fault.
And it's leading to other weather.
And it's, how does smoke lead to other weather?
Well, yeah, you can get other conditions like lightning and
the smoke doesn't cause the lightning, does it?
The dryness and stuff might also be... And the lack of visibility. I don't know. I'm grasping here. I'm not an expert.
Well, I think we've proven that neither of us are experts on this. But yeah, folks, it's smoky outside. There's also thunder going on. And craziness just everywhere, it seems.
It can be hazardous to your health if you're not careful out there.
Okay. Happy Pride, by the way. It's June.
I heard that. Yeah, this is the time of year,
huh? You don't wish me a happy Pride back.
Happy Pride to you as well.
Thank you. I had to pry it out of you. But for the first time ever, I'm told, Human Rights Campaign has declared a state of emergency for LGBTQ+ Americans. Yes, Americans. And they have issued a national warning and guidebook to ensure safety for LGBTQ+ residents and travelers. We got to get that guidebook. How do we get the guidebook?
It's a PDF. You can download it.
Oh, okay.
There's a nice grid that shows the laws, so you know the laws for every single state. Kind of like Normal's cannabis law thing. But anyway, it's a grid in seriousness to guide people, if you can believe that.
Unlike the cannabis thing, though, this dictates who people are.
Yep.
Not what people want to do recreationally, but actually... your very being, your very existence. That's what makes it so incredibly ugly.
And in some cases, your ability to access basic human needs, like what places you can and cannot use, which restrooms. Really good info because of the just heartbreaking amount of legislation around the country that is being pushed through by really radical far-right hate groups.
It's pure hatred. It is pure hatred. This is something that we saw coming last year. They started with the kids. They're moving on to the adults. And let's just give a guide as to what's happening. Today, HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, which, by the way, is the nation's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer civil rights organization, they officially declared a state of emergency for LGBTQ+ people in the United States for the first time in its more than 40-year history, following an unprecedented and dangerous spike in anti-LGBTQ+ legislative assaults sweeping state houses this year. And this is pretty much all on the state level. More than 75 of these bills have been signed into law this year alone, more than doubling last year's number, which was previously the worst year on record. So this is a snowball out of control going down a mountain. Yeah, Florida stands at the forefront of the fight. Don't have to tell you that. Against these oppressive laws now proliferating throughout the nation. It's heartbreaking to witness families uproot themselves in search of access to health care and inclusive classrooms free from book bans and censorship. You know, we've talked with people and actually heard phrases like, yeah, you know, his family lives in Texas and their kid is trans and they had to leave. You know, they had to leave. And it's just, it's so sick to think that is what people are living through now. The fear, the just the tremendous loss of opportunity, of joy. Anyway, our universities, once renowned for their talent and innovation, are witnessing a drain of exceptional educators and students who now seek refuge in places where academic freedom and excellence prevail over political indoctrination. Maybe a place like Stony Brook. Our state's, talk about Florida here, this is, comes from a Floridian. Our state's economy has lost over $1 billion as businesses and conferences withdraw their investment in our state. And I say, bravo, bankrupt the bastards. You know, we need a better phrase. You know, they say go woke, go broke. You know, we need a phrase that we can throw in their faces because it doesn't work that way. All right. If you're being woke is a good thing, you know, being aware and wanting people to have equal rights and the sane wokeness. Of course, you can point to insane wokeness and say that that encompasses everybody. It does not. But we need a good rhyming phrase to throw at them about being woke or not woke. You know, we just need more people to come up with slogans and things like that. We're too busy trying to change the laws and fight for rights. Anyway, continuing with this, the assault on freedom is not limited to one state, but permeates across America. The erosion of civil liberties by extremists to further their own political ambitions poses a direct threat to the health and safety of LGBTQ residents, individuals, rather. It's imperative for all of us to recognize the gravity of this moment and commit ourselves to being on the front lines, unwavering in our fight for freedom. That's from Nadine Smith, the CEO of Equality Florida. And in this press release that was put out by the Human Rights Campaign today, there are just all these examples of things that are going on throughout this country. And it's staggering. For instance, transgender sports bans in 21 states, 30% of high school high school age transgender youth, approximately 90,100 of the estimated 300,100 transgender youth aged 13 to 17 in the U.S. are living in states where they are unable to simply play alongside their friends. As these bills extend all the way down to kindergarten and in some states through college, many more transgender youth and young adults are impacted as well. And then there's gender-affirming care bans in 20 states. 30.9% of all transgender youth aged 13 to 17 are living in states where they can no longer access life-saving best practices medical care. And that is a fact. That is, it is most definitely life-saving. If you're having doubts about that, you need to do some reading. You need to do some reaching out and talking to people who have lived through this. In some states, care has been banned not only for youth, but adults as well. Yeah, surprised? You shouldn't be. Especially through bans on public funds going to provide this best practice healthcare. More than 30 states introduced gender-affirming care bans during the 2023 legislative session, meaning that at its height, half of all transgender youth in the U.S. were at risk of losing access to vital gender-affirming care. And, of course, bathroom bans in 9 states. 14.8% of transgender people age 13 plus, over 243,000 of the 1.6 million transgender people in the U.S. Yes, 1.6 million. They live in states where they were unable to use bathrooms, locker rooms, and or other facilities in accordance with their gender identity while in K through 12 public school buildings, if not elsewhere. This includes 32,700 transgender youth nationwide, 10.9% of all transgender youth aged 13 to 17. Over 110,000 transgender people aged 13 plus live in states where they were also banned from using bathrooms and facilities in some public settings and buildings outside of K through 12 schools. So, yeah, this PDF can be found at hrc.org, the Human Rights Campaign. It's June. It's Pride Month. It's going to be a volatile one because, you know, unlike some of the news stories I've seen, we were listening to one from, I think, CNN the other day. It just made things sound like people are just complying. It's just so sad. We used to be able to march in the Pride Parade, but since they don't want children to see that, we're just going to cancel it. It's sad. We're upset, but that's life now. No, that's not how the community is dealing with this. Might be for CNN. I heard a Canadian report on As It Happens, which is a great show people should listen to, where it talked about people fighting back and disobeying these laws and causing confrontation and standing up for their rights, because that's what you have to do when they're trampled upon.
Whilst suing the bejesus out of these initiatives and totally misguided efforts, mm-hmm, that are wrong-headed and really bad policy long term. And I think some of the coverage, I don't know if you have the story there, but believe has referenced some of the attacks, the violent attacks, and it's so funny how the weapons and that argument has been sort of hitched on. Instead of solving it there, it's been hitched on to mental health and this whole campaign, mm-hmm, that it's gone too far, and that's why people are reacting violently, so we have to rein this in. And it's turned, and it's sort of seen as a twofer for the political right to get away from looking at actual just insane policies with weapons and just diverting all of that politically and trying to finesse it into further justifying making these entire classes of people invisible, further invisible, to meet their ends, you know, to sort of redesign society the way they imagine it. And that's so sick and cynical and just unforgivable.
Yeah, yeah. And as we mentioned, going back to Florida, which I really don't want to do very much, but just to make this clear, there's a new law that Republican presidential candidate and Governor Ron DeSantis signed last month that makes it difficult and even impossible for many transgender adults to get treatment. Yeah, so everybody who said, no, this is just to protect the children, mm-mm, it wasn't, never was. Some of us saw that, many of us didn't. But now those laws are coming into effect. Transgender adults in Florida, they feel like they've been blindsided. And they either have to leave the state or not get the care that they need. And it's sick. It's awful. In Los Angeles, police officers had to separate groups of protesters and counter-protesters outside a Los Angeles elementary school that has become a flashpoint for Pride Month events across California. People protesting a planned Pride assembly outside the Los Angeles Unified School District's Satakoi Elementary School wore T-shirts emblazoned with "Leave Our Kids Alone," which is something that I think our side could wear just as easily. Carried signs with slogans such as "Parental Choice Matters" and "No Pride in Grooming." Okay, I don't know what they are thinking is going on here. Tensions at the school have been rising since last month when a social media page was created to urge parents to keep their children home on Friday, the day of the planned assembly, because they might catch gay or something. Across the nation, Pride Month celebrations are kicking off amid rising backlash in some places against LGBTQ plus rights. Community parade organizers, school districts, and even professional sports teams have faced protests for flying rainbow flags and honoring drag performers. While some Republican-led states are limiting classroom conversations about gender and sexuality and banning gender-affirming care, some Democratic cities and states are seeking to expand LGBTQ plus rights and to honor the community's contributions. And that is a good thing. But you know what you're seeing in many of these Republican states that have Democratic cities, such as Jackson, Mississippi? They want to take over those cities and say that state laws are, I don't want to use the T word, but the state laws trump city laws. And even though the vast majority of people in the city support this, we're going to do it the state's way. And that is what we are seeing more of, where literally what you vote for doesn't matter anymore. Los Angeles Unified School District board member Kelly Gonez said the assembly went on without issue. It included a reading of the Great Big Book of Families, which includes details about different family structures, including single parents, LGBTQ plus parents, grandparents, and foster parents. The horror. Gonez said the school board wants to listen and to have these tough conversations with parents who don't support the assembly. At the same time, I think it's really important to be factual about what content was shared today. The fact that it is age appropriate and that it's simply about providing inclusive, welcoming environments to all of our students and families. Outside the school, protesters against the assembly outnumbered those who were there in support. This is Los Angeles. Some protesters identified themselves as parents of students in the district, but would not give their full names during interviews, saying they had agreed not to as a group, citing safety concerns. Broadly, they said they felt elementary school was too young to discuss LGBTQ plus issues. Well, you know, if kids ask questions, you kind of have to answer them one way or another. And if you answer them with a bunch of hatred and rhetoric, well, who's doing the grooming? You know, who is setting these kids up to embrace hatred and ignorance? So, okay, let's come back out here to Long Island. I have a critique about Long Island. I'm sure I will still have much critique on this subject. But I can say that crowds filled the downtown streets of Patchogue and Babylon this Sunday with colorful and joyous celebrations of pride, saluting the accomplishments of the LGBTQ plus community. The mood was festive, and the routes were lined with rainbow flags, bubbles, and cheering spectators. People danced on floats that pulsated with music. Businesses showed their support with rainbow-themed displays and decorations. And folks, if you see a business with a rainbow flag, go inside, support them, thank them. It matters. It really does matter. I'm not talking about, you know, the kind of corporate support that will evaporate the first time some fascist pig runs in there and starts tearing things down or shouting or making a scene. No, I'm talking about people who will stand up and say, this is what we stand for. I don't know if people can hear that thunder, but I think that I have the support of all the forces around me. At least I hope so. Or I'm making some force very angry.
The gentleman is recognized.
Oh, boy. Anyway, organizers of both parades, both Patchogue and Babylon, said it was more important than ever to mark the strides the LGBTQ plus community has made over the years and protest laws being enacted around the country that are chipping away at their rights. Spectators and participants in both communities numbered in the thousands. Babylon's parade started with 10 cars and 500 people in 2020 and grew to an event that drew over 3,600 people last year. And that's pretty awesome. I don't know how many showed up this year, but I imagine it's around that number. Right now, according to the founder, M. Roman, we are fighting against anti-gay, anti-trans laws, and a lot of drag bans going on. So having a town or village like Babylon, which is predominantly conservative, show their appreciation, acceptance, and acknowledgement to the queer community is the most amazing thing. And yeah, definitely. When you're able to reach people and have them have that revelation that, wow, this is not what I've been told it was. To show that the younger generation has nothing to fear, Roman said. This is their hometown. They are safe and welcome here. And that's something that means a lot. So if there is an event in your neighborhood, I know we have a parade coming up in Huntington. Of course, there's New York City. There are all kinds of events this month. Please, please support them. Show up. Spread the word. And fight ignorance whenever you can, because there's so much of it around. So many lies are being spread out there. And it's really awful when you consider the people that it's hurting, the people who are most vulnerable and just trying to find their way. It's unforgivable. And we can't let this happen.
So and indeed, like living your life as well, you know, if you see things that are going on, however, even if they're a little subdued, get involved, be a part of it, and make a show of support, especially this month under the circumstances, because it's so painful to hear and report on this stuff with this level of seriousness, because it may not affect you necessarily, but a lot of people are feeling an enormous weight of this, just in addition to so many other issues and areas that need attention. So do what you can. Have a conversation with someone. Just be gentle, because people are on edge, I think, more than they need to be. It should be a celebration, but...
hey, we're always nice.
It's a community that's also used to standing up and speaking out, mm-hmm. and showing up places.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be proud of who we are, but at the same time, we have to be patient with people who don't quite get it, you know? And if their first contact is that of hostility, that's what's going to flavor their impression. Let's show them something they're not expecting, you know, welcoming and inclusivity and just explaining things they might not quite get, and just an exchange of concerns and ideas and thoughts and experiences and things like that. You'd be surprised how much people have in common if they just talk to each other. Hey, here's some good news. And again, we're going back down to Florida, but it's good news out of Florida. It's a narrow ruling. Wait, if it's a narrow ruling, how did one judge do it? Okay. Someone has to explain this to me. In a narrow ruling, a Florida judge blocked enforcement of the state's ban on transgender affirming care today, calling the rule an exercise in politics, not in good medicine. U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle granted a preliminary injunction against Florida Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo, the Florida Board of Medicine, the Florida Board of Osteopathic Medicine, and other state leaders, and will allow the parents who challenge the state to access medical care for their transgender children as the ban's constitutionality is debated in court. The plaintiff's adolescent children will suffer irreparable harm, the unwanted and irreversible onset and progression of puberty in their natal sex if they do not promptly begin treatment with GnRH agonists, wrote Hinkle, who was appointed by former President Bill Clinton in 1996. The treatment will affect the patients themselves, nobody else, and will cause the defendants no harm. That's right. The preliminary injunction will be consistent with, not adverse to, the public interest. Adherence to the Constitution is always in the public interest. Bravo. Hinkle's decision presses pause on a board rule that advanced the prohibition on puberty blockers, also known as GnRH agonists and hormone therapy. For the three plaintiffs in the case, Jane Doe on behalf of Susan Doe, Gloria Goh on behalf of Gavin Goh, and Linda Lowe on behalf of Lisa Lowe. What are the odds? Okay, so I guess people don't want their names known. Advocates say the ruling signals that the ban could be deemed unconstitutional and apply to all parents, as it infringes upon rights to make informed decisions about their children's medical treatment. Hinkle's preliminary injunction immediately allows these parents of transgender children to administer drugs that can delay the onset or continuation of puberty and cross-sex hormones, testosterone for transgender males and estrogen for transgender females, which promote the development of characteristics that align with a person's gender identity. The injunction does not refer to gender-affirming surgeries, which Hinkle states 98% of those surgeries are performed on adults, not minors. Hinkle stated the denial of gender-affirming treatment would cause needless suffering for a substantial number of patients and will increase anxiety, depression, and the risk of suicide. These are facts. They have been borne out many, many times, and it's good to see a judge get this. But what you have to remember is that there are fewer and fewer judges like this. All the judges that Trump appointed, well, not all of them, but a large number of them, are perfectly willing to not consider the Constitution and just consider their own narrow beliefs, and just apply their values, their way of life, to people that are not the same. And that is what they just refuse to accept. So let's hope this is the start of a trend. But really, You need more judges that get it to be appointed. And in order to do that, you need to elect the people that will appoint those judges. Because, you know, the 4 years from 2016 to 2020, we're going to be paying for that for a very, very long time. And we need to be making up for all the backward steps. We're seeing that right now. This is a direct result of it.
And so much to follow in keeping up with that. So we'll be reporting as much more of this kind of stuff as there is.
Yeah.
But stay vigilant. Even if it feels like in the short term there's no way out, or that the judges that have been placed from that reign are immovable in the moment. I mean, I think it's just something we have to be aware of. If it doesn't go that, if they do kind of toe that line and they don't think for themselves.
Trump.
What?
I'm sorry, what? I didn't hear you.
No, you just said Trump for some reason.
No, that wasn't me.
Okay, Kyle. Well, okay, since you brought it up, Trump lost it as lawyers have pushed the Department of Justice not to charge him. His attorneys were spotted at the offices of the Department of Justice yesterday, where they reportedly begged prosecutors investigating the former president's hoarding of classified documents not to charge him. The New York Times reported later on the day that special counsel Jack Smith, who was leading the investigation, was in attendance. That last-minute scramble to mollify investigators is unsurprising. Trump's expected to be charged in the probe. Rolling Stone reported in May that his attorneys have been preparing him to face yet another criminal indictment. Now, Trump gave credence to the speculation hours after the meeting concluded through an unrestrained all-caps rant on Truth Social. How can DOJ possibly charge me, who did nothing wrong, when no other...
Trump.
Can you turn that off? Lips were not moved. Wait, is that... Is it back? Is the Trump machine back?
Oh, this happens.
Oh, no. Oh, but for God's sake.
Should I get the wire? Where is it? Oh, can you find it?
No, that's the thing. You don't know where it is.
I don't know where all the wires are moved around.
Okay, for folks who don't know, back in 2015, in a very ill-conceived move, the station installed what we refer to as the Trump machine. And that was back 2015. That was back before, you know, the nightmare actually began. I'm not sure why it was installed. We were told it was a requirement because everybody was saying the name all the time and we had to keep up with the minimum requirements. So I think initially it was something that was just maybe once a minute, which means it's probably coming up pretty soon. But then it increased.
Trump.
Yeah. You see, that was a minute from the last one.
Well, they just sent,
I don't want to do this again.
It came in a box and there was no paperwork. There's no,
but we didn't know what was in the box. You can't blame us. You send, you know, electronic equipment to a radio station. We're going to plug it in and get it working, but we don't know what it does. And then we couldn't unplug it, that we couldn't uninstall it. And then it kind of, you know, replicated, you know, like Star Trek, what they do there. It just grew and took over. And before you, 2015, that was 8 years ago. I remember the summer of 2015. That's when this started. And okay, you know, I was listening to MSNBC actually earlier today and realizing that they are saying Trump about every two sentences. If you hold your breath, okay, you turn on MSNBC, keep us on. Don't turn away from us, but keep us
Trump.
On. Yeah, right. And you will basically hold your breath. You will never be in danger if you hold your breath until the word Trump is spoken. You will never be in danger.
It's that weird thing of validating him by being shocked and surprised at every turn of some news cycle he's generating.
Well, you know, okay, the good about it now is that the reason they're talking about him is because he's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it is less of his own. Well, he's generated it, but it's not. It's that it's as negative as ever. And, you know, the no news is bad news, you know, might be actually coming back in spades. But we can't, I don't know. I mean, I can't read too much into it, but there's so much being read into it. every turn. Oh my God, no. Where is it?
This is what I
do. Unplug it. If I pull the cord, that's the phone.
No. Stop this.
I'm out of ideas.
Now there's like a thousand of them. This is what happened. Okay, can we just cut the channel? I know, we won't have it. Oh, good. Thank you, Kyle. But this means we can't play any music because that's what it's coming over the music channel. So if you could get in the back and rewire a little bit.
They're all the same. They're all black. They're all black wires. I don't know.
Dilithium crystals you can use and just reverse phase and we should be okay.
Oh, is that what it is? They're not.
You have to reverse phase.
You got to get on the other
one. That's a mistake we made in 2015. We didn't reverse phase. Okay. All right. You know what? I'm not going to even read that story. Except I'm gonna say that he's in a lot of trouble. Grand juries everywhere are getting together to decide, you know, what they're going to do about him. And I hope they lock his ass up because he has done so many bad things. Trying to steal the election, trying to overthrow the government, just basically filled with hatred and spreading lies and racism and fascism and all that. Yeah, there is no fate I would not enjoy. The Republicans apparently are tearing themselves apart as well. A band of House conservatives have mounted an extraordinary rebellion against their own party leaders on Tuesday, venting their angst over the recent debt limit fight with a surprise protest that derailed the chamber floor. Kyle, you watch C-SPAN. Did you see this surprise protest that happened today?
No, not today.
Republican leaders spent nearly an hour working to resolve the standoff with their right flank, which disrupted the party's plans to pass legislation protecting... Who do you think they want to protect?
Insurrectionists.
Right-wingers, Nazis, fascists, monarchists, maybe? No? Gas stoves.
That's right.
What they want to protect. They want to protect gas stoves from potential government bans. But ultimately, roughly a dozen conservatives, most of the members of the Trump aligned, I'm sorry, I have to say it, it's in the news story, Trump aligned House Freedom Caucus, they voted against moving forward on a bill they support. Oh, I love it. It's a bill they support, but they're not going to move forward on it because they want to get Kevin McCarthy. Yeah, the move was entirely unexpected by senior Republicans, according to two people close to leadership, and some GOP lawmakers feared it might be just the beginning of a conservative drive to undercut Kevin McCarthy's team unless, as some of Tuesday's rebels put it, McCarthy keeps the promises he made in order to win the House's top gavel in January. All right. Let's watch them tear each other apart. But that shouldn't affect the drive to replace these people en masse and stop moving backwards and actually start getting things done. You know, if you look at the news over the past week when the whole debt ceiling thing was finally agreed to, you will see some conservative outlets claiming that it's a victory for Republicans when it's obviously not, because who's angry at this? It's not the Democrats. I mean, yeah, Democrats are unhappy about some aspects of it, but the people who are really furious about it are those conservatives that wanted to hold the nation hostage, wanted to make Joe Biden look really, really bad. And he didn't look really, really bad. I know this because, you know, they tried to focus on him tripping on stage instead and say, wow, this proves that he's incompetent. So all talk about the debt ceiling suddenly went away because they could mock an 80-year-old guy falling on stage. But here's the thing. The guy fell on a sandbag that was left there by some moronic Secret Service agent, and he got right back up. Now, all that did was prove to me that he's in pretty good shape for somebody who's 80 years old, that he could take a fall like that and get right back up and then clock the Secret Service agent with the sandbag. Well, he should have done that. Idiot. But all this mocking and ridiculing of the guy because, you know, he's up there. First of all, you know, your dear leader Trump is only a couple of years behind him. So make up your mind. Is being old good or bad? And if you're actually going to say that he's incompetent, well, you know, he seems to be getting a lot done. He seems to be getting people to work with him. And isn't that what being a president is all about?
Yeah. He's doing as good a job, I think, in face of so much resistance and obstinance and unwillingness to cooperate. But there are those leaders that, through these discussions, at least with that debt ceiling thing, just couldn't go along with this maggot priority list of basically sinking the entire credit rating and economic future over this set of legislation and getting to actual nuts and bolts and an agreement that allows us to pay our bills and all that. You know, we talked about it for a while leading up to it. Everybody knew it was going to happen. So it, the only reason it wasn't getting done until that last minute was that it was being politicized so that, you know, everyone could throw into all these concessions and, you know, make people desperate mm-hmm. for compromise, which I think I think the Democrats were somewhat prepared for. And we'll see. I mean, at least we got past it, and maybe we can.
The whole thing was so stupid.
It's just, yeah, engineered, artificial.
You know, under Trump, they raised the debt ceiling, what, 2-3 times without any kind of consternation or, you know, being indignant about, oh my God, we're spending so much money. The tax breaks to the rich alone, trillions of dollars over the course of a few years. And then just deciding, well, yeah, we don't want to pay for any of that. You already wrote the checks, so you gotta pay. You gotta pay. That's how it works. That's how it works for us. That's how it's gotta work for these people. But you know what? It's all going to be okay, because guess what? Why does everything happen on Tuesday? Everything happened on Tuesday. Today, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has filed to run for president again. Yeah, he's back. And that means we're going to have some comedic relief in the months ahead. Oh, God. Everybody. DeSantis, Pence, Chris Christie. Who am I leaving out? Nikki Haley.
It's like a comedy sketch troupe, sort of like
it's going to come out that way.
Sketch comedy troupe, like traveling the primary states or whatever, you know, just to, you know, get visibility and glad hand. Wow, so inspiring. So,
I mean, does he really think he's going to win? He's got to raise all this money, just waste money. That's what these people do.
I think he's going to throw sand in Trump's face.
A sandbag, yeah, sure.
Or, well, yeah, you know.
We know they're on stage.
Proverbially. So. Yeah, that is something that's readily accessible in all kinds of stage production. So you got to watch out for them and, you know, keep an eye on them, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I feel like going to try to take, well, he said it. He's going to try to take Trump to task and in the primary and stick it out through the general.
Okay, can I say this though, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted as praise for Christie, but I do think he is the most genuine of them. He is the one willing to say something critical about Trump and also to not take himself so seriously. And I don't know, kind of have like that New York attitude of just like, yeah, it is what it is. But that said, I would never vote for him in 100 lifetimes. But I don't know. I do think he will bring something to the table that is going to be different.
Yeah, he has the air of like, there's nothing that Trump can say to him that's really going to get to him. But,
yeah, I mean, DeSantis.
Or that hasn't been said already.
My God, DeSantis just it makes me squirm with his just awful way of dealing with any kind of criticism towards him. Like we did to Disney, you know, Disney simply said we don't like this anti-gay attitude that this government has, and just for that. War on Disney.
Yeah, that's your business-friendly candidate there.
It's insane. The biggest employer of the state, and he's basically seeking to hurt them. It's like Elon Musk, except in politics. Very, very thin-skinned, you know? And you say something insulting, and you become the target. And also, you know, DeSantis, he can't stand up to scrutiny. Here's a story that came out today as well in the New York Times. And his first public appearance since officials in California accused him of orchestrating recent charter flights that carried groups of migrants from Texas to Sacramento. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida did not address whether his state was responsible for the transports. Instead, at what his office had billed as a news conference in Wildwood, Florida, Mr. DeSantis signed a bill on Tuesday morning that he said would give consumers more control over their online presence, and then walked off the stage without taking questions from reporters. It was a news conference, but no questions. The silence from Mr. DeSantis, a Republican running for president, on a high-profile incident drawing national interest is unusual, especially given pointed attacks on him in recent days by Governor Gavin Newsom of California, who was a Democrat. Mr. DeSantis usually answers questions from the news media after events like the one today. His office has not answered repeated inquiries about whether Florida is behind the flights. And these flights involved roughly three dozen migrants who arrived in Sacramento. They arrived on two charter flights, one that touched down on Friday, one yesterday. The migrants, most of whom are from Venezuela, said they were recruited for the flights outside a shelter in El Paso. Several said they were promised help finding work. Now, officials in California have blamed DeSantis for the flight, saying the migrants carried papers indicating that their travel had been arranged by the Florida Division of Emergency Management and a private contractor known as Vertol Systems Company that also arranged sending two plane loads of migrants to Martha's Vineyard last year in an operation funded by Florida taxpayers. Interesting that they were in El Paso and somehow Florida was involved in transporting them. I mean, this goes to show that DeSantis and Abbott, Governor Abbott of Texas, are likely coordinating, working together, trying to create an immigration problem throughout the entire United States and expand what is happening at the border.
No doubt to use it as a political pinata.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to do for people who already hate immigrants and are fearful of what they imagine as unrestricted entry to the country. Yeah, it's easy to get those people to get outraged. But when you actually look at the facts, what are we talking about here? Since, what was the Title 42? Since the ending of the policy, the COVID-19 policy that restricted asylum seekers, there have actually been less people trying to immigrate to the country. Less people. Unlike what everybody in politics, everybody in the media said. It just goes to show nobody really has a handle on this. And we've seen the ugliness spread, not just in the border states, but throughout the country, including right here in Suffolk County. And that's what they want. They want that ugliness. They want that contentiousness. They want that hatred of people who might be different. And we can't fall for that at all. We have to recognize it for what it is, an attempt to manipulate the conversation and forget what this country was founded upon.
And it's capitalizing on a populace that has been primed, deliberately primed with a whole lot of misinformation and waves and waves of advertising, political sentiment, nastiness in the communities around the country over the last half dozen, you name it. I mean, that is just being harvested to meet some gain for 2024 in these races, and it's predictable. So let's get on it. Let's act and deconstruct it and speak to what really is prescient for voters.
I like the way you were able to talk and hold a soldering iron at the same time. That's amazing. But were you able to fix the issue? Can I bring this up now? Do you think it's gonna?
No. Whoa. Off. Just cut it.
I'm trying, Kyle. Okay. So wait, did you change the voice somehow? I think you altered the wrong thing. You didn't change the message.
I actually put a. Yeah, that's a capacitor, isn't it?
Sounds like a female voice now. I don't think we had that before. Okay, well, you're making
right.
You're making progress of one sort.
Well, I don't recognize any of this, and nothing's labeled.
Let's talk about something good. You might have heard this in the news last week, but Stony Brook University, where we broadcast from, has received an amazing donation, $500 million on Thursday. And it came from an alumnus and a former faculty member. Yeah. I'm blown away. I think it's the largest donation of its kind in history in the United States. That donation was made by the Simons Foundation. It was formed in 1994 by Jim Simons, who was a former Stony Brook math professor, who later made billions as a hedge fund manager. His wife, Marilyn Simons, who received her bachelor's degree and doctorate at Stony Brook. The two of them were so enamored with this university that they gave $500 million to the university with no strings attached. You don't have to name a building after me. You don't have to do this or keep these people out or anything like that. No, this is because you're awesome. Because you inspired me. You helped me. I made billions of dollars as a result of things I did here. Maybe. I'm not sure he's giving credit to Stony Brook for that, but he's just basically very appreciative of Stony Brook. And I've gotten that kind of feedback from people who have gone to this university over the years, myself included, none of whom have the wherewithal to give this kind of money, but certainly would recommend coming to Stony Brook or at least visiting Stony Brook and taking what we have learned from the place and applying it to our lives, wherever that might take us. So, wow, this is just an incredible thing to see. And it's what philanthropy should be, you know, not the Bill Gates kind that somehow has all kinds of baggage attached to it. Just something like this that's simple and sincere and very, very inspiring.
Whoa, you got to bring Willie G into this?
I just think, I don't know, something... people never seem happy when he enters the room. I think people feel like they're being talked down to. I don't know. This just feels real.
I agree, though. There's this immediacy to it. Different families, I guess, different fortune, but so fortunate for Stony Brook. I've seen a lot of the response and read some of the articles and so forth. And this is going to go to amazing stuff that they're going to let it accrue and reinvest the funds into, I believe, scholarship programs. But it's going to be an amazing mound to pitch from, so to speak, yes, for the school. For sports necessarily. This is going to be for hardcore Stony Brook stuff. And it truly is it's the appreciation, I think, of all the capabilities, all the possibility, and all that Stony Brook alum do in their community and in the world. Mm-hmm. So much will be affected by this. I know there are a myriad of programs that this is going to touch, and really dedicated professors and so forth that will be working with really focused, talented students that will be benefiting from these funds. And I might sign up. You know, if the GRE is just like 10 minutes and it doesn't really matter, I'm in. You know, I pick a program. Don't look. I can unshred parts of my transcripts. But yeah, I mean, this will inspire people to maybe think about going to Stony Brook and really accelerate all of the progress in the programs. I don't know. Is there more that...
What's interesting is that Governor Hochul had signed legislation earlier in the year that's sort of like a matching fund. I think it's 40% of donations. So right away, and it was really funny watching the press conference because... she was obviously very happy to hear about the gift, but she said she didn't think that so quickly it would cost her so much, because now she's got to cough up $200 million to match the 40% of the $500 million. But obviously very happy about this.
Said it with such grace, too.
Yeah, really. So we're actually getting $700 million donated to the university. And no, it won't be deducted from the budget or anything like that. This is in addition, and I hope it inspires other rich people out there to make similar types of donations, because this is what really matters. This is what changes the tone, and just inspires people to do even bigger and greater things. Not that they would listen to us, but a big thank you to the Simons for their generosity. They have donated roughly $1.2 billion over the years to Stony Brook. And not only that, to the community as well. They built the Avalon Park in Stony Brook as a tribute to their son who tragically was killed. They've done so much good. And we need people to do good.
Well, and it's stark contrast from so much that has been made of education mm-hmm. and academia being the enemy, along with the media or whatever other pet industry and vocation that you've targeted. But, you know, you can also laud some of these places. They're doing amazing work, and they're host to this very radio station, and so many students and members of the academic community, programs and events all come through this very studios. So we're proud to do our part and continue to report on this and the impact of it and all the amazing stuff going on at Stony Brook.
Yeah, I mean, WUSB does such incredible things in the course of a week that we're constantly listening and finding new gems. So please listen to 90.1 or 107.3 or WUSB.FM to find your magic. It's all here somewhere. There's another story, though, I'd like to end with. This has to do with state lawmakers who have once again overwhelmingly passed a bill that would return state recognition to the Montaukett Indian Nation with new language that codifies the term reinstatement and list reasons why its status should never have been taken away. The bill has passed unanimously in both the Assembly and the Senate, where Senator Anthony Palumbo on last Tuesday, said it was time to correct this injustice by reinstating a status that should never have been taken away. The bill passed the Assembly 141-0, 141-0, and it passed the Senate 61-0. Now, last year in December, Governor Hochul vetoed a similar bill, indicating that more work was needed to verify the tribe's historical designation. Cuomo before her vetoed similar legislation three times before, so there's concern that she might veto this. But what, you know, I've been asking this question and nobody has answered me yet. Nobody seems to understand this. But with a vote of 141-0 and 61-0, might that be enough to override a veto? I mean, don't we do that in this state? So it seems like this should be a sure thing.
Well, and it seems like that's a heck of a lot of individuals that could maybe answer those questions.
Absolutely.
Because they seem to have come to a clear, conclusive determination themselves, and I'm sure a minimal consultation would result in, you know, at least a couple good references.
So let's get that recognition for the Montaukett Indian Nation. Hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. And hey, you know, we were out out east, Native community, the Shinnecock Native community, and we saw some signs that might be of interest to some of our listeners concerning the dispensaries they have out there for cannabis, which, yes, they do exist in the Shinnecock area on Long Island, tax-free because they're not part of New York State. But guess what's coming soon? 24-hour dispensary, something that even in New York City, there is no prospect of that anytime soon. That is going to be a game changer, I think.
Yeah, there's multiple locations that are either reopening or opening, and a flagship building is still basically being finished up and trimmed and all that, and it's just really exciting times there. And all over the state. I think there was an article this week about New York State growers have too much pot. They've just grew much. Like that's part of the New York system.
There's too much pot because the state has been moving so slowly opening up dispensaries.
It's the retail, yeah.
That the farmers have been doing their part, growing it, but not enough dispensaries to sell it. So there's talk of everything from farmers markets to speeding up the process a bit.
I think the governor and they're on board. They're working diligently, I believe, with the cannabis control.
And for those of you who are concerned about cannabis dispensaries opening up, we've been to a few of them, and the interactions are always so amazing, so positive, so educational. Check it out. These are good things. It's raising all kinds of money, correcting all kinds of wrongs. and just making people happy. And that's the important thing. Hey, we're out of time. Please stay out of whatever's going on out there, whether it's rain or smoke or I don't know. Write to us, OTW at 2600.com.
Be attentive for other human beings out there.
That's right. They're everywhere. And stay tuned for Finn. We'll see you soon.
So long. Good night, everybody. Mapatini gang komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, gang komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, gang komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, gang komi kwaZulu, gang komi mapatini, komi kwaZulu.
Don't be gay, Sangovuma, Gukali, Tombi, 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 Gay, Sangovuma, Gukali, T